Blog Talk Radio.
Here, the Duke Machado Show, weeknights, Central Standard Time, 10 p.m. I just want to take a few moments here before we get into this discussion tonight on immigration. We have back our guest, David Walalu. He's a very interesting person. I'm glad to have him as a guest and glad to be getting to know him better. He's a border contributor for the Waco Tribune, but he served in the U.S. Army Intelligence Corps and was also an international security analyst. He holds a Ph.D. in public policy with a focus on homeland/international security and is an instructor at MCC, and he's from around this Central Texas area, so really glad to have him. But before we get to that, a couple things. One, this program here is all about fresh ideas. You know, you can tune in anywhere and get a rehash of the news. You can hear it over and over again. But here we really try to provide a different perspective, a different angle. And when I was talking to David, he suggested that he was interested in talking about immigration. So, you know, just like we had a rational discussion about moderate Muslims and Islam, we're going to have a discussion here. And he says he's going to challenge the listeners. But before he challenges all of you, I do thank you. I know that I can look at our statistics, and we're gaining our audience all across the country. Thank you for listening. Thank you for going back and listening to the archived audio. We have 10 times more archive audio listens than live listens, so I know that that the word is getting out. This is a really cool program. We try to make it cool so the listeners can take something away from this program and think about it. So without any further delay, I want to bring David on the line. Are you there with us?
Yes, I am.
All right. So, you know, like I was mentioning, it was your idea. You want to talk about immigration. Why are you so interested in that subject?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you again for the invitation again, and I will do it in a heartbeat because I believe in this show because it's unfiltered and it will sincerely create a platform for an honest and civilized discussion that we, all of us, can learn from and to, in the hope of moving our country forward. The answer to your question is because I am an immigrant. So I am a real story. And here I am. I've been in the U.S. for almost 27 years, worked my way up. And I understand how the immigration topic, it is a contentious issue here in American politics. It is by far not the easiest one to debate. And you can only imagine the issue of immigration, how we can add more fuel into emotions about the motherland, about the incursions, as we all witnessed this past summer with what's going on with the Republican presidential contest, and also on the tragics, what happened in Europe with the refugees from Syria. So you can just see how this argument tends to produce more heated debate, if you will. But the issue with all this is that we are lacking the most is a rational debate about finding a solution to the immigration issue in the hope to find a balance that will balance our needs to maintain a healthy and a balanced demographics while keeping our great nation ahead. So, be that as it, that was one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about immigration. And
okay,
for that
so
matter, yes, sir.
No, go ahead. I don't want to cut you off.
No, you go ahead. Yeah, I was just going to think.
Go ahead. So the thing is about this discussion, and you bring up the point of having a, we have been lacking a rational debate, and this is how it goes. You're talking to some people, and you're talking about candidates, and they say, oh, well, that candidate is for amnesty.
Okay.
Well, no, this candidate's not for amnesty. This candidate is for, say, for example, a documentation plan. And they say, well, that's amnesty. So then the other side says, well, so what, are you for mass deportation? And sometimes they say, yes. So Marco Rubio, most notable GOP sacrificial lamb on immigration, he knows what it's like to face the heat of the establishment, or I guess it's the establishment, but, you know, we're all confused. How do we work through this? How do we solve the problem? I'm really sitting here taking notes, so go ahead. I'll turn the floor over to you.
Okay. Well, there is. I would start it with this. There is a Chinese proverb that says, and I quote, "The beginning of wisdom is to call things by their right names." So first of all, let's call an immigration issue a political one that defines, because it defines how divisive our nation is, and because of lack of political will to find a solution. We can't just be throwing words here and there to gain votes or to be well-liked or to be accepted or to follow the crowd. We have to think of the greater good. What's good for our nation? It's not what's good for me as a politician. And that's what we are lacking. So we go with both options. Deportation. Are you going to deport 11 to 12 million individuals, undocumented individuals, and the cost associated with it? And who's going to pay for that? And just by logistically speaking, it would be a nightmare to even do that. On the other hand, you grant amnesty, well, you can't do that either, because the country, this nation, that is a land of immigrants, it was based on immigrants, and I can understand the argument, but it has to be done legally. When I moved here, when I decided to become an immigrant in the United States, the first thing I did was to read the Constitution, to understand the laws and values of this nation, because I made a conscious decision that I'm going to become a citizen of this nation. This is my home now. I better understand what its values are. I better understand what its laws are. I better understand how I can contribute to this nation and assimilate into it. So when politicians threw it, like what we all noticed with Mr. Trump, the playbook, how he was played, you can't just throw statements like that without backing them up with some sort of substance. So all we can talk about, you deport 12 million people, that's unrealistic. And at the same time, you can't just let people roam around the country here, because there are laws here that have to be respected. And we have to enforce those laws.
So how do we get there?
I beg your pardon?
So how do we get to that point? What's the middle ground?
Well, first of all, we get to that point because obviously politicians would throw in the immigration issue like a football between one party to the next. And whoever is in control just kick the can down to vote for the next party or wait for the next cycle of elections. So it was never an honest debate about immigration. Let's fix the immigration issue. Let's find out first where the loopholes are. Why are we having this issue? Why the process of, let's say, whoever applying for immigration here, why the process is not moving accordingly, efficiently? Is it part of the federal government that is not doing its job? Is it part of because some entities are not willing to put the effort into deciding how many immigrants we're going to let into the country? Is it political because we want to arouse the emotions of individuals? I mean, the whole country itself is based on immigrants, as I stated. I mean, it's a reality. If it weren't for immigrants, we wouldn't be where we are today. But,
well,
it
you
has
know,
to be
back
done
then we used, back then
yeah.
we used to have Ellis Island. Ellis Island seemed to handle all of these. There were, it was like a filter. You could only get through if you were healthy enough, if you maybe knew someone who was here. They weren't just going to let anybody through, and people had a chance. We don't have that now. Countries
well,
are on list. You know, people are on a list from a certain country. They're not going to make it no matter how much money they have.
That is correct. At the same time, it is our right to do that. The federal government has the right and the authority to ensure who gets in into the country. I mean, let's face it. If you are going to be bringing intelligent individuals that can contribute to our society, then you're welcome. But if you're going to be allowing individuals to drain our resources, because that's not right. And also because it is not fair to the Americans who are working hard and see part of their earned hard-earned dollars goes into supporting some undocumented individuals. And I have a hard time with that. I am for immigration. I will support immigration. But it has to be done according to the laws of the land. So, yes, the government has to filter who gets in into the country. We have to do that.
Well,
Obviously,
right now, no one is listening to the law of the land. No one cares. There's no enforcement. Businesses aren't raided. There aren't consequences that these business owners are having to face for continuing to hire illegal immigrants. You know, I understand they say if we turn the magnets off, or get rid of the magnets, they'll quit coming. I don't think so. We, as bad as their countries are, we are always going to be a magnet. We don't have to have things. We just provide a place. And they seek refuge here. Whatever happened to Statue of Liberty, give me your tired, your whatever, hungry, your weak, or whatever it is. You know, it used to be a time where we were accepting. It seems, you know, I don't mind being accepting, but now with all the terrorism and everything going on, geez, it's dangerous.
That is correct.
It's dangerous times
because
we're living in.
It is correct, because you can't just let whoever in. And at the same time, the whole idea, the whole notion of being an immigrant is to contribute to your adopted country, to your new homeland. That's the whole point of it. If we're going to just let whoever, it's almost like we're going to lower our standards. Why everybody wants to come to America? It is because the land of the opportunity, that is true. But also because it's very different than other countries around the world. What makes us stand out? It's our values that we have strayed away from. What makes us stand out is that when you work hard, you'll achieve whatever you work hard for. That's what separates us and differentiates us from other countries. Just look at Europe right now, how they're struggling. And they're struggling with immigration because their immigration laws are so complicated. I mean, when you look at Germany, for example, or Italy, or France, or Spain, for that matter, the population is aging. By 2050, they expect that their population is just going to age so much that they're going to figure out a way how they're going to generate money to make the government work and so forth. At the same time, for us here, because of lack of that honest debate, we have to recognize the role of immigrants. And I'm going to give you just some examples, for example. Google was founded by Sergey Brin, who emigrated from the Soviet Union with his parents when he was 6 years old. The new CEO of United Airlines is a Mexican-American. And extraordinary numbers of Indian Americans have risen to become chief executives for major corporations here in the U.S., including like Pepsi, Motorola, and Microsoft. Those individuals have contributed, the immigrants who came down here. the prominent AIDS researcher, David Ho, who came from Taiwan. He was only 12 years old at the time. You think of the Indian-American astronaut, Kalpana Chawla, who perished in the Columbia space shuttle disaster. And the list goes on and on and on. That's what makes America unique. But at the same time, we have to have a process in place that can identify, okay, those individuals, those immigrants that's going to be contributing to the betterment of society, not that's going to drain the resources of our country. Because it's not right, it's not fair. It's not fair to you that you work so hard, and yet some of your hard-earned dollars are going to turn around and support an undocumented individual. I understand the argument that they want to better their lives. I came here to better my life. But also I came here to work hard, to assimilate, to follow the law, and stand in line like everybody else and wait for my turn.
Okay, so let me ask you. You said that we've been lacking this rational debate. What? Give me an example of what a rational debate sounds like. Just go into it and say what?
Well, a rational debate will be, let's find out our political leadership in Washington. Let's sit down as grown-ups and put the party affiliation aside, put the political objectives aside, and let's face the issue head on. Let's talk about how we're going to decide to even take the first steps or put a strategy in place. How we're going to deal with the illegal documents they are already in the country. So one step to do, one objective, for example, is, first of all, let's stop immigrants coming into the country till we resolve the issue here inside the U.S. So you can either make a decision as political leaders, of course, with the consultation of the American people. After all, the government is by the people, for the people. We have to have a say into that. That's how I understood the Constitution. One man, one vote. Our political leaders decided that, okay, we're going to have to see who has broke the law, who committed crime, who this, who that. Those will have to be out. That's a non-negotiable.
Filter out the bad ones.
That is correct. You're going to have to start with that first. Because I'm sure your listeners have heard about the sanctuary cities, like the incident that happened in San Francisco. The illegal was here three times or four times, I believe. Well, there is a flaw in the system to begin with. Why was he back in the city to begin with? Obviously, somebody wasn't doing his or her job. Some entity. Then once you filter those individuals, then you move on to the ones that, let's say, the ones who went to school here or lived here for a period of time. Then we, as a nation, policymakers, of course, we have to take the lead on that, decide how we're going to proceed with those. Okay, you want to become a U.S. citizen? You're going to have to do A, B, C, and D like everybody else. You will not be just handed a citizenship because it's not right, it's not fair to that immigrant who's been standing in line waiting for his or her turn.
What do you say to the candidates who say that they need to leave the country and reapply in their own country and then come back when we accept them?
They can do that. I did that. I did that one when I came here. I was accepted at the University of Quebec à Montréal in Canada. Yeah, you can leave, go apply, and come back here with the document. At the same time, on our end, we need to look at the process. Is the process taking 5 years? Or is the process going to be streamlined into 6 months or 7 months, which is reasonable? Now, when you have an immigrant that wishes to improve his or her life, has to wait 5, 6, 7, or even 10 years for a document, that's kind of, it shows a lack of efficiency in the process to begin with. Why don't we streamline the process and see, okay, we can streamline this process to 1 year max. And process...
But some people say that's not enough of a penalty. I hear that a lot. they want them to feel pain.
Well, that's a human nature. So why do we have to do that? Let's figure out a way, if they've been illegal for a certain time, they can pay back taxes, pay back whatever fine the government decides deemed reasonable. You're not going to fine an immigrant $1 million because they don't have that kind of money. And it's not realistic. Let's come up with a fine, let's say, or they can pay back taxes, whatever. And that will be the way of redeeming whatever mistakes they made, as far as breaking the law for staying in the country illegally. But the step of them moving out of the country, applying in their homeland, and coming back, I see that process is reasonable and it's fair. As long, again, as long as it's not, the process taking 10 years.
10 years is way too long. Okay, so we're up against a hard break. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, you're going to talk a little bit about the European immigration crisis. We'll be back in just about a minute and a half.
One disease. Millions of lives permanently disrupted. Today, there are over 5 million Americans living with Alzheimer's disease. But Alzheimer's is taking more than memories. It's taking lives. What few realize is that Alzheimer's kills more people than breast cancer and prostate cancer combined. And Alzheimer's is the only disease in the top 10 causes of death that can't be slowed, stopped, or prevented. From 2000 to 2013, while deaths from other diseases decreased significantly, Alzheimer's deaths increased 71%. But equally disturbing, many living with Alzheimer's say they are not being told their diagnosis. While more than 90% of people with the most common types of cancer say they are told their diagnosis, only 45% of people with Alzheimer's or their caregivers say they are told. The economic toll is staggering, too. In 2015, it will cost the nation $226 billion to care for people with Alzheimer's. By 2030, 72 million baby boomers will reach an age of greater risk. The fact is, everyone's at risk for Alzheimer's, even you. But everyone can help, especially you. We're the Alzheimer's Association, the brains behind saving yours. Join us.
All right, we are back. We're visiting with David Walalu. I think I'm saying that correctly. If I'm not, I'm sure he'll correct me here real soon. He's got quite a background. He's served in the Army Intelligence Corps. Holds a PhD in public policy and homeland security, international security. He's an instructor at McLennan College here in McLennan County, Texas. Always great to hear from him. So, David, we were talking right before the break about what's going on in Europe, all the refugees. I mean, we think we've got a problem with immigration. Imagine Germany, imagine all these other countries over there dealing with this right now. We've got about 5 minutes or so left, and I'll just turn it over to you.
Okay. Well, you're absolutely right. Europe now is struggling with this asylum seekers. It's rising so sharply across European Union countries. And given the circumstances and given the aging, European Union aging population, the questions are emerging whether Europe is returning to selective immigration. I mean, the large-scale immigration into Western Europe now is more than ever. And when you look at statistics from 1960 to 1973, the number of foreign workers in Western Europe doubled from 3 to 6% of the workforce. And this is according to the Center for European Reform in London, England. It is a systemic issue for Europe. And Europeans have to deal now with the European Union aspects of it, that migrants from Eastern Europe. Last time I was in Paris, I took a walk in Champs-Élysées. I was shocked to see the number of homeless individuals on the streets of Paris. And those are not from France. Those are from Eastern Europe.
So Europe is struggling with that issue. And at the same time, because the economic migration, it's because the population of Europe is set to decline over the next 50 years. And I found in my research one statistics for Italy, for example. Italy will lose about 28% of its population by 2050. So in order to maintain its working age population, Italy is forced to start importing more than 300,000 immigrants per year. Alternatively, they are forced to keep their citizens working till they are about 75. Germany is no different. Germany is accepting all this because they were all the immigrants from Syria, because also, besides the humanitarian intentions, which they are good, they are also thinking in terms of how aging the population is going to be within the next 25 to 30 years. So they are taking the necessary steps right now.
So, you know, I hear about all the refugees, the people seeking asylum, not just the economic reasons. Are they in trouble? Who's coming through these borders into their countries? And, I mean, are they – I've seen reports where there's people basically making the assumptions or accusations that terrorists are just sneaking in with all these refugees and flooding these European countries.
Well, this is, I mean, there's certain accuracy to your statement, but I'm going to tie it to what I said earlier about our process. We have to filter who's who. And Europe, at this point, they don't know, because those immigrants, at least from the readings that I did, I found out that most of them, they threw their passports out before they even get to the borders. So they have no idea who's who, because there is no record, there's no document. It is problematic for Europe, and they're going to have to deal with it. But at the same time, they're going to have to figure out...
How is that going to... Go ahead.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. At the same time, they're going to have to figure out... All I'm saying is, how is all that going to affect the United States? What's happening there now? How is that going to affect us?
Well, it's going to affect us if you end up having terrorists migrating to Europe, and the next, before you know it, the U.S. might become the target. It's easier to be integrated into Europe with the European passports, move around, any way you want. I am certain you heard, and your listening heard about what was going on with the cell that trying to sell the nuclear material to ISIS,
mm-hmm.
and it was in Moldova. So it is within Europe, so it will be easier to do that. If Europeans are not very careful, I mean, again, I am not against immigration, but it has to be done properly. You have to be careful to how the process is done.
Well, don't the progressives, or I call them the liberals, the Democrats in our country, they're going to say that we shouldn't be so stringent, that we shouldn't be so hateful to people.
We are not hateful. I mean, I never felt that somebody was hateful towards me as an immigrant. I didn't feel that, never felt that at all. And I don't think so we are that nation, but we can't be complacent either. We can't be. Time has changed. The world has changed, and we need to change with it. We need to change with it. I mean,
We definitely need to solve our problems before we run out of time.
At home. Yeah, you fix your home first, like any family does. When you got problems, you fix your house first before you project that to the outside world. We can't be telling the world what to do, and yes, we couldn't even find solutions to our own problems.
Well, hey, you know what? That's another 30 minutes that have gone by pretty quickly.
I can't believe it.
Yeah.
That's what you get for having a good
amazing.
Show. Yeah.
Well, it does. A good time, it flies by fast, like they say. Folks, you can tune in every weeknight. We're here 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. This is Duke Machado, and you are listening to the Duke Machado Show on Blog Talk Radio. My guest tonight, David Wallaloo, a writer for Huffington Post, Waco Trib. Really cool guy, and glad to have him on the program. Thanks for joining us tonight, David.
Thank you.